Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And there's actually a lot of stuff I need to talk about, but we need to cover the things that we've already been talking. And I really, on Fridays and Mondays, I really want to dive into this constitutional president concept of what a constitutional presidency from President Trump would look like and some very specific things that would need to be done. And so we'll kind of do the recap and then today's portion of that. But today's portion is there's so much depth to this. This, if you remember when I went through the constitutional president, we're going to dive into the militia and our national security. And so there's a lot of things that, you know, need to be discussed. So this will be a multi-part episode, I should say. It'll span across multiple episodes, even though this whole highlight of the Friday-Monday shows will, you know, span across several episodes, and hopefully we'll get it all done before January 20th or whatever the inauguration is. but it is now or never. That debt is fraud, and you're more than welcome to, on your own, to apply your faith in using those tools that allow us to call for and obtain, making the appeal to heaven to obtain his blessings and assistance. And so you're more than welcome to join Loudon Liberty Prayer Circle every day. And the time and the Zoom meeting is up on Reclaiming the Republic's website. And your campaign begins today. Anybody and everybody that is upset or just dissatisfied with the lack of interest by our public servants in actually supporting the Constitution, that is the national crisis. At every level, every cell, every citizen must actually take the commitment and acknowledge that they have a duty to perform. I've been haranguing on this for a long time. And as Madison points out, we have to take a stand on every infraction. I'm only repeating what he put in the Virginia resolutions. No tolerance towards any sin. Full tolerance towards the sinner in, you know, in helping and so forth. But we also must provide justice. In other words, if somebody commits a crime, if somebody commits a sin and they fail to support the Constitution, then unfortunately they're to be gone. They are no longer eligible to be in service. Folks, it is paramount that everybody understands this importance in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. There's a reason why public servants have completely obviated this one part of the Constitution, which is a part of the reason why they want to obviate the Constitution overall. Because if they can obviate the Constitution, then they have unfettered access to be able to receive money and do all sorts of things that help them. I don't know very many people that go out of their way to say, please hold me accountable. And there's very few people that will actually, you know, walk in. I mean, I remember there was a time with my daughter. She made an error, and the clerk at the store basically gave her too much money back. And she pointed that out to me, and I go, that's awesome. That's great. So what are you going to do? And she goes, well, I don't know. And I said, why don't you, because it's not your money, why don't you give that back? And so we drove her over to the convenience store, and she went in and told the person, the cashier, and the cashier was overwhelmed. This was a long time ago, folks, a long time ago. People like that are almost extinct. Now, I think that there are people listening to this that you're not extinct, but I'm saying young kids, I should actually qualify instead of just saying people. I believe that the generation that is dying off today by attrition, by age and what have you, are the last of those people who understand the importance of being honest. And so how refreshing would it be that we actually reward those people who are honest? Now, when we start moving forward and we actually have a good person in office, and they're all guilty. I mean, we're all guilty of sin. And there is not anybody serving that has fully supported the Constitution. I mean, in one way or another, because they haven't done things. What I mean by this is almost every citizen out there that is in office, every public servant that is in office, if they have not called out all of the unconstitutional actions, not by this person, but you know, as the public servant, if that public servant hasn't called out the federal government's failure to enforce the Constitution regarding the invasion, if failing to enforce the Constitution regarding currency, I mean, we have a color-coded Constitution. And every public servant should actually be holding that Constitution, the color-coded Constitution, and saying, look at all these violations. This is unacceptable. We need to get all people in government back in check to the Constitution. In other words, in doing that, you've actually used a very broad brush, but I honestly believe we need the Martin Luther method of the 95 theses. We need a comprehensive listing that can be provided so that everybody sees and understands, wow, you know, this person is absolutely fully supporting the Constitution. So the other thing I wanted to talk about, so this is where, again, I'm plugging, your campaign begins today. Your campaign, you need to start getting organized. You need to start helping people say the movement begins now. We are starting the movement in taking back the Constitution. We're not starting a movement to put people in office for political expediency. We're putting people in office that are going to focus their time in office in how to restore all of our public servants back into the framework of the Constitution, getting all people to understand the importance of compliance and demanding compliance from them. So one of the things that I also will mention, since we're kind of wrapping up this week, and I'm not going to mention this anymore, Timber Nation has, they have basically reached their full fill of being able to get orders out. So what that means is my new order that's going in, they're not going to probably be able to touch it for a while. So one of the things that I needed to dive into today is this restoring, or actually reconstituting, our national security system. We are not in a line with the Constitution regarding national security. What we covered before already, we covered the invasion, we covered the currency, we've covered the removal from the UN, or, you know, removing the UN from American soil and basically ripping up all the unconstitutional treaties that were made. We've also covered the immediate appeal that Trump needs to make to the states to say, you need to start doing your job by holding us accountable and actually taking back roles and responsibilities. Now, it's been brought up that a lot of people are, you know, just literally living with their hands out because they want a job with the federal government. They want the federal government to be, you know, their nanny. They want the handouts. They want either that or they want the entitlement to a job. And this is becoming a real scourge on America because there's so many people that actually are going to the government saying, help me, give me And that right there is self-serving and destructive. That's what's going to destroy all of us. We all need to actually start moving back towards the county and saying, what can I do and what do I need to do in my county to, you know, to restore its roles, responsibilities, or actually to establish them? Because we've already said that your county doesn't even have a constitution. You need to get those types of things right. We've also covered the lockdown of the Department of Justice and how Trump can use the Department of Justice to start holding every public servant in the federal government, first Congress, got to start removing everybody that's in there. AOC gone, Pelosi gone. These people are flagrantly, they're openly committing an insurrection against the Constitution. Now, I understand the words I'm saying. There is no allowance for a public servant to actually demand actions that would directly violate the Constitution. And yet, these folks who are in Congress believe they're above the law and untouchable. You want to start cleaning things up? Trump needs to start with the worst bad actors immediately. When we look at you know, how to do this, it wouldn't be too hard to actually start seeing how in January, where he can actually start sending these people back, saying these people have been removed. And when the Supreme Court tries to step in and say, you can't do that without due process, Trump, all he needs to do is point to Section 3. Actually, there is no due process. This is a standard. This is a qualification. This is the eligibility. You are no longer eligible to sit in that seat as soon as it's proven that you violated your oath. They don't get impeached. Section 3 basically took over the fact that because no public servants would impeach themselves, they weren't going to hold themselves accountable. They gave us the law that actually says you are no longer capable of serving if you have violated your oath or allowed and gave aid and comfort to those who are violating the Constitution. Maybe you're not directly doing it, but you're not holding them accountable. When I say giving aid and comfort, allowing them to stay in office is giving them aid and comfort. Allowing them to continue doing what AOC is doing, Pelosi and the rest of these folks, allowing them to continue without calling them out and saying this person needs to be removed. We've got a cancer cell that must be surgically removed by the law. And Section 3 does that. It removes them. They're not losing life. They're not losing liberty, nor are they losing property. So there is no need for, because this is strictly a standard. You're no longer meeting that standard. So go back to what you should be doing before you came here. And if you've been making a career out of this, like Nancy Pelosi, then, you know, go figure it out. But people that get removed, Trump needs to actually make this play, and he needs to actually get Congress, because this is not an ex post facto law. This would be the actual support of the Constitution, because all the people that get removed will no longer receive any retirement or any compensation or any emolument. And I would love to see, as an aside, I would love to see somebody take this on, whether that be the Department of Justice or what have you, to basically go through the finances and determine how much money that person made unconstitutionally and then throw that out to the state, because technically the state needs to charge those people. And it'll always boil down to, will the people be willing to hold their people accountable? We actually have so many insurgents in America today that when Nancy Pelosi goes back to her congressional district, those people will just pat her on the back and go, that's all right, we'll figure out another way to, you know, get you in or replace, put somebody in that's just as bad as you, because that's what they want. We've got real problems. We have real problems, and this all needs to be fixed. Actually, on December 2nd, I talked about the retraction of staffing and offices in the Department of Interior. I also, on the 6th, basically talked about state sovereignty and the ability to sell land or any form of resource within a state to a foreign entity. And then we talked about last time, on the 9th, on Monday, we talked about restoring impost taxes and disbanding all foreign holdings in America. So the next thing, what we're talking about today is, like I said already, the reconstituting of our national security system. And so what literally has to happen is we have to first put on the table, because I think it's disingenuous to say, oh, well, we can just do this and snap our fingers. Trump is going to be faced with all sorts of political conundrums regarding this one topic. And I say that because when you look at the tangled web that they have wove, a lot, this will upset not just one ore cart, it'll upset the ore cart, the apple cart, I mean, you know, the fruit carts, the mineral carts, all of these different carts. It is huge. But when we look, and how many people complain about our national defense budget? Well, if we were actually spending it properly on our national defense, then would people have a complaint? When we look at how many people, you know, and the bureaucracies and the level of, you know, stars that are out there, it's just ridiculous. This is every time a new force is created, all of a sudden we create new positions of paying people, you know, not major general, because that's actually a rank. We're talking about, you know, employing more generals and a lot more people, a lot more chiefs and Indians, to actually go and do the work. That's an old reference to, you know, the old days of the bosses, the management, and those who do the work. So as the commander-in-chief of the military and the nation's security forces, Trump actually needs to push this forward. So I'm here to tell you that I honestly do not see Trump doing this, because I don't think he can convince himself and or even others to get on board with this. We have an apparatus that has been created, a national defense system that has been created that has completely compromised the sovereignty of the states, as well as the dignity and sovereignty of the counties. In other words, it has completely compromised our governments. And the grandchild government, the federal government, has literally done this to the state and the county governments. Those governments that we've created to protect us, they've been compromised. So the first problem that I see is, and we talked about, you know, there are problems, so let's put these things up front. I believe that the politics of the standing military apparatus, when I say standing military apparatus, I mean all of the new added military like Space Force, all the commands and all those people. When you look at the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Joint Chiefs of Staff should actually be the Secretary of Defense. And then it should probably be the general of the Marine Corps, the admiral of the Navy, and then I would probably say one person that would be the acting general of the 50 state militia, basically the home defense system. And so that should be it. It shouldn't be this huge room of people with lots of shiny stuff on their collars. And it should be something that is basically doing the will of the people as the Constitution permits. That's it. Not manipulating and not playing, you know, war anymore. So that's one of the things that he has to basically deal with. There's going to be massive resistance because all of a sudden people are going to be out of a job. There's generals and officers and even enlisted that will be out of a job. And how will that happen? Well, we'll get into that. Another point of resistance outside of the government is government contracting. Government contracting will not be happy because many of the big strategic deals that they're doing, And let's just examine one specific environment, one milieu. When we look at space, there are lots of contractors that are trying to, Boeing, SpaceX, and so forth, but those are the two primary ones, that are trying to provide a system of delivering us into space. And as far as I'm concerned, we are in a race for freedom right here on Earth. It is freedom versus government domination of the people. In other words, subjugation to the globalist plan. We need to win the war of freedom against globalism. And therefore, if we're actually worried about this race of conquest over planets, you know, and other celestial bodies, then we are not going to win the war of freedom here. We need to help everybody in the world that wants to have full individual liberty and individual sovereignty and live in a state that guarantees and protects that. Then we need to start selling that. This goes back to a constant mantra that all foreign sovereign states that are compatible and interested in living under our constitutional republic are, can be, we're open to them basically petitioning to become a state. And then emphasizing Hong Kong, Crimea, Ukraine, and basically let them know, Taiwan, we're no longer going to play in protecting existing states. If you want to employ liberty and you want to have, you know, the freedom of being unencumbered by these threats of Russia and so forth, then you need to become a territory, transitioned into a territory so you can be transitioned into a state. And just think about this, folks. I believe that there are lots of states, lots of countries out there where the people would gladly hand over their country away from the despots that are ruling them so that they could be on their way of becoming a state in the United States. I would see that there would be many states. Now, the two states that would probably not be willing because the globalists just wouldn't let Canada and Mexico go. But Hong Kong, I can actually see Hong Kong flipping. I can see Taiwan flipping. If the conversation is out there, it's thoroughly, you know, addressed so that everybody is completely aware of this opportunity, there's no doubt in my mind that creates a more secure and more stable world. And what will end up happening is the people in these states that do not like the way their government is treating them, China, Russia, and all these hardcore statist states, I'm here to tell you that those people would openly demand an election to basically be transitioned into the United States. And that sending their existing leader, I mean, look at Assad. Assad has left Syria because not for a good reason, but for all the wrong reasons. What's going on politically throughout the world and all these other countries is the wrong reasons. The globalists are manipulating and playing these games. The people need to wake up and say, you know what, this is what we want. And we do not want, you know, dictators anymore. Look how long Assad has served. You know, if you have an election every 4 years, these guys would not be elected again and again and again and again, especially if you actually changed your government, if all of these states changed their government into the model under our Constitution where there's no magistrate anymore, it's divided. You have a separate judiciary. The body of sovereign is your legislatures, your representatives, and the executive is only the enforcement of law, enforcer of law. I mean, they have no wielding power of creating law or doing things outside of what laws the legislature's created. So when we come back, I'll try to finish all of this, and then we'll move forward back into the issue of common law, because this has come up again. And so we'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so getting back to what Trump needs to do in basically what we talk about, reconstituting the national defense system. So he's going to get this pushback from the existing apparatus and all those officers who will be out of a job. And when I say out of a job, there's going to be more people that will be removed from the defense system and released back to the states. In other words, permanent pay and all of that type of stuff, because the bigger you create a bureaucracy, the more employment and your overhead costs are. When we look at major corporations and how major corporations, to survive, actually did a reduction of redundancy and a reduction of missions and so forth, what they did was they consolidated. They basically reconstituted the essential missions to make sure that they were being met in as many forces. So they, unfortunately, in doing those types of things, there are people that have to be let go. Now, doggone it, I remember the CEO of General Electric, forget the guy's name, you know, because I'm bad with names. And that's because I don't sit down and write all of the stuff that I want to present. But I do remember that the CEO of General Electric, I think it was Walsh, who basically said, moving forward, every year we will lay off the bottom 10%. So if they were employing 1 million people, 100,000 people would be laid off because they were labeled as the bottom 10% producers. And they would hire new people. And what that did, it took a while, and there were lots of people that were, you know, not happy with this new policy because, you know, these people were entitled to jobs. At least they felt, hey, these are bad guys. They're doing their job. And what ended up happening was he created a paradigm that was firing a corporation that was actually firing on all cylinders. They were reaching levels of productivity that were unsurpassed. Now, there's a lot of, you know, I'll just say blood and death in the wake of what he did. But when you look at government, is there a responsibility of employing people that can't be the top performers? No. Let's get into, though, what will actually have to happen. As we talk about, and actually before I get into this, because I just took a whack at Space Force, even though Space Force and most all of the current celestial missions will be scrubbed, this does not mean that we do not have to worry about defending ourselves regarding celestial missions of other nations. In other words, we do have defensive reasons to absolutely be to secure America from, you know, satellites and or any other conquest of nations currently. So what we need to do is we need to win the battle for freedom and focus on what we have to do strategically to protect us and the Union and the Union's interests. So President Trump, the first thing he's really going to need to do in addressing, because there's probably even more issues, but I just don't want to say, hey, there are issues that he's going to have to understand walking into the room. You just don't walk into the room blindly and say, you know, I'm going to do this, because all of a sudden you'd be caught off guard by, do you know what this means? You're going to do this. You're going to do this. So understanding what those things are and the impacts that it's going to have, the spending on defense will go down in some ways. And it will actually transition to where the states will actually be better off. Now, President Trump first needs to motivate Congress to dismantle the Dick Act of 1903 as unconstitutional and restore the state's constitutional responsibilities back to the states, including their mission of the execution of the laws of the Union. Now, so in other words, they're going to have to basically replace the Dick Act with basically an act that will be based on the Constitution regarding the militia, as to how the federal government will permanently create and equip, create a program in equipping, training, and basically making sure that all of the able bodies of citizens who will have to serve. Now, let's just look at it this way. When we look at who is to serve, right now it has been laid out clearly that men and women are to serve because Congress has made that standard. And right, wrong, or indifferent, I'm not going to talk about the morality or any of that. The standard is that. So the states will then have to abide by that, because that's the law of the Union, because it actually is in the Constitution for them to set those standards. Therefore, the states will then have to determine how all of these people, because every U.S. citizen has the responsibility. Now, let's back up for a second, because I'm actually going to be, what I'm going to say is going to really upset a lot of patriots, especially those who are Second Amendment right advocate folks. Now, when you look at the Second Amendment, because you can't do this, you can't have this conversation without being genuinely talking about the facts, right? So when we look at the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, right now, the fact that we don't have a militia and we don't have the security of the state intact, we're dependent upon the federal government of defending ourselves, then the right of the people not to be infringed at all is very clear. However, if the states actually had a well-regulated militia, then they could actually determine who should not be able to, because and there has to be these set grounds. I'm going to tell you that if you go into the military and you get washed out, or, you know, you get flagged as a spaz, they will actually kick you out and say, there's no way you can be in the military because we can't trust you with a weapon. Those types of people, when these militias and every person is a participant, we have to make sure that people are not in the militia that should not be. In other words, the states will have this responsibility to ensure that everybody can serve. And those who are incapable, I mean, so they're going to have to, and this is where the states need to play with the petri dish. I understand that blue states will try to eliminate. The federal government's charge is to ensure that all persons of militia age, so who sets the standards? The federal government, right? So from age 17 to age 60, 55, whatever that is, people within that age group, all people within that age group, have to be a part of your militia. And that you have to have basically, and this is where I would say, because the Constitution doesn't talk about what we would call active and ready, the ready reserves and the inactive. In other words, the three different levels. You have those who are active, serving at that point in time, those who are the active reserves. In other words, they're not serving, but they're ready to go at a minute's notice. They're ready to go. And then the inactive. In other words, they're a part of it. Then they will be called up if necessary. They're the last people to be called up if there's insurrection, invasion, or what have you. And so they have the most level of security of having a job or what have you. And so the states will actually need to create laws that will basically make it impossible for a employer, a corporation, to fire somebody who is having to go serve in the militia. They will have to basically create this protection that doesn't mean that a person in a corporation can't be fired. It just means that they can't be fired because they're in the militia. Therefore, there needs to be this symbiotic relationship from the company and the state and so forth. And actually, good companies, what they will do is, because I've seen this with a person serving in jury duty with good companies and even those who are active reserves. I have actually seen those who actually get called up to have to go to, you know, Kuwait or what have you. The company would actually make up the difference of the pay. In other words, the military would actually, you know, you'd start working and obtaining your military pay. And the difference between what your civilian pay would have been and the military pay, they actually made up the difference so that you were you're still making more money than, and that way you would not be hurt with your legal, or I should say financial, obligations. And I think it's hard for the states to actually do that, to inflict that. But those are the types of things that actually need to be on the table for everybody to say, if you want to be a good company, you do this. We have real problems when it comes to all people being tagged and assigned to be active, inactive, and I should say active, active reserve, and then inactive. So we have these problems with the people being assigned to that. It is my suggestion, and I believe Congress could actually suggest a couple of ways to do this, but it would be my suggestion that everybody would rotate every 2 years. In other words, you would basically rotate into an active duty status from inactive. And then you would, inactive ready reserve would go to active, and the inactive ready reserve would go into active ready reserve. So you rotate and give everybody an opportunity to have a drink in the responsibilities. And over time, doesn't mean that you're not getting promoted as you're going through the system, and or how they want to, you know, have this career advancement for everybody as an aside. But it makes sure that everybody has, one, the responsibility being afforded them. Now, for conscientious objectors, they can be actually acknowledged and recognized that there would only be so many. If you want to be a conscientious objector, then that would basically mean that you would be put into a non-combat role. But you'd still have to serve. Now, what the build on top of this, if you get so many, because I believe that we're going to have lots of kids that will not want to serve, if they do not want to serve and they want to be conscientious objectors, and all those billets are filled, all those seats, those jobs have been filled of nurses, doctors, what have you, because they'll actually have to qualify for those positions, by the way. And so as we look at what to do with those folks, if they want to conscientiously object and be removed from the militia, then they would not then be a normal citizen. They would have to be re-caveated. And I think this is where the states need to go to say, you know, we're going to afford you some, you know, voting privileges, and we're going to afford you these types of things, due process, your liberties and rights. But your right to bear arms is another story, because if you're not willing to take up arms to defend the Constitution, then you should not be able to take up arms at all to defend yourself. Because the whole point of the county defense system is everybody takes their share of doing that, which means that really, when you're not in the federal service, when would we be needed in federal service? Is when we're attacked, is when everybody would actually come to the aid of the nation. We will no longer fight wars, at least the militia will no longer fight wars on foreign soil, period. There was never an intent to deploy a federalized militia, put it on ship, and take it to Europe, take it to Asia, take it anywhere in the world. That was the job of the Navy and the Marine Corps. So I'm just literally focusing on the state at this point in time, okay? So this way, you know, we can actually start talking about the strategic missions and so forth. But the issue that we have is that we actually have to create these constitutional standards, and we have to ensure that the state is embracing these things. So the federal government will have, they do have a constitutional requirement of training, right? They have to permanently create an equipping and training program to ensure that all bodied people receive their firearms, their side firearms, as well as the necessary firearms that would be necessary to serve their mission in the Homeland Defense. What that means is that it's no longer just guns and flak jackets and helmets. They'll need to have the necessary warfare gear, whether it be Humvees, tanks, artillery, those types of things, and they will actually have to be able to do training and preparation and so forth. Now, there's no reason why that the state can't have, and they should have, what they would need. Now, let's look at it this way. I know this is a very deep, detailed thing that we just can't gloss over and say he's got to do this. When we look at the militia defense system in the interior, that would be more strategic, where there would be these need for manning and or supporting the strategic mission. In other words, the militia would be supporting defenses for the ICBM silos, the boomers, and or those types of things, the defenses of people doing things in the area. That way the Navy will be able to just do and focus on their mission of getting the tankers necessary to support the strategic mission of aircraft, of interceptors, bombers, and those missions. So in other words, there has to be this symbiotic relationship between what the states will have to do, because folks, we don't live in the age of muskets anymore. We don't live in the age of simplicity. So there has to be this symbiotic relationship that the states will need to actually serve, that the federal government will basically pay for as far as the equipping, the training, and so forth. So what we're really doing, if you really look at it, is we're going to actually create and expand the military forces, the militia forces, to include every citizen, every man, woman in the union, and no pronouns. In other words, every man, woman in the union, we won't be recognizing those who want to be identified as something else. In other words, people that want to pretend, maybe they shouldn't be in the military, but that's something that each state will have to do. And I will tell you that the federal government will have to create those standards to say, we're not playing with that. And then so the state will actually have to say, okay, we can't have a pronoun corporation, or not a corporation, a company or battalion or platoon, not going there. Can't do that because the federal government's created these standards. But bottom line, again, when we really look at every citizen in the United States, there is a requirement for all of them to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. So if you're going to conscientiously object of your citizens' obligation of being a part of the militia, then there should be consequences with that. It's okay. You just won't be able to have a gun. You just won't be able to do these other things. You won't be able to vote in all things. You'll have very limited voting power. You'll be protected, but that protection and everything else, the rest of your citizenship, could easily be taken if you actually start supporting things that are considered an insurrection against the Constitution. That's what we call treason. So there's no mincing of words on this, folks. When it comes down to a person who claims to be a citizen of the United States, they cannot say, I'm going to be a conscientious objector, but I want to be a citizen of the United States. That they are willing to take up arms to support that. If they have a conscientious objection, then they will support that one way or the other. And so once all the roles are basically filled up in the active ready reserve and the inactive reserves of the state, then those people will have to be basically said, okay, you know, we can't cycle you through because there's just too many people. Then, and those people who want to volunteer to basically reduce their citizenship because of conscientious objection, that would make it easier for the state. In other words, okay, you can't have arms because you're not willing to be the citizen. We shouldn't trust people that, you know, this goes down to, do you give guns to your enemy? Do you give guns who will not actually take a stand, which means that they're not there covering you. They're not there to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. This is very critical. I mean, I can't see how we can have this conversation. And as you can see, this is really taking a lot of time to just discuss. So when we look at the deploying of the plan, the federal funding to mercenary forces, in other words, city police, county sheriffs, all of these, you know, militarizing these mercenary forces will cease. They'll actually have to be a part of a deployment plan to where there is no longer assets just given to a city, state, or city, county, what have you. It has to be done to the state, and the state actually has to deploy and or rotate these resources so that every county member has opportunities to be familiarized to firing, operating, and those types of things. So, in other words, you can't have, you know, all of the weaponry. You can't have surface-to-air missiles and all of those types of things because those are defensive positions. You can't have all of that in every county. Now, do you need that in every state? And I'm here to tell you that the states of the interior, it would probably be less. But the states on the border with Mexico or the coasts and Canada, because there are wackos up there too, the borders where we actually have to worry about defending ourselves against, you know, intruders or military actions, invasions, what have you, on our borders, because again, an invasion, whether it's by, you know, people that are not armed, is still a military action. It may not be an armed action, but it's a political military action. Because when you have enough people come in, they can overcome you politically. The framers were very clear in guarding against any form of invasion. So back to the strategic mission, will we actually need to defend the airspace over Kansas or over Wyoming? No, I don't think so. But if there's boomers or missions like that, we probably need to have some minimal types of defenses as an auxiliary or, you know, as a supplement to the other, I'll just say, along the borders and so forth. But this is something that actually needs to be discussed. We actually need to look at, or I should say, those who are in office, the president, and those who he appoints should actually be looking and doing a full audit of the existing architecture of the military defense system. But again, the money going to the states for federal, not federalizing, but for giving them weaponry to basically, you know, have these APCs and so forth at police forces, that's got to stop. It shouldn't be police forces. It needs to be the militia. And as a matter of fact, if you really look at how the militia should be implemented in the state, it should actually alleviate and not downplay, but actually disband the police forces. Your city does not need a police force if you've got the citizens of your city working in the militia. They should be providing for under the sheriff, under the auspices of the office of the sheriff, should be providing the necessary police force for ensuring, because when you got everybody enforcing the law, it gets harder and harder for people to want to actually break the law. Because if you break the law, then you're no longer able to be in the militia, you can't bear arms, and you know, you start losing your privileges. Folks, the problem is we've moved forward through, you know, this evolutionary process of constitutionally doing things right to the progressive doing everything wrong. We have evolved and moved forward into basically never taking people's privileges away from them when they've basically done things that they don't deserve. I mean, we're at a point now that those criminals that have committed felonies and so forth, they have the right to vote. How did that happen? When you go to a point where you have basically violated the trust of the people in your city, in your county, in your state, and you've committed a crime of harm to them, stole, you know, done some violent crime or something else, how is it that that person can instantly be restored back to a full voting status and a full citizen? We need to reevaluate these things. I know that there's a lot of people that just always want to err, but the reason we have so many problems is because we're too nice and we don't hold people accountable. This goes back to what I was saying at the beginning of the show. Public servants don't want to be held accountable. We, the people, don't want to be held accountable. The day we start holding people accountable and responsible for their actions is the day we start embracing this concept of enlightenment, because you cannot have individual liberty. You cannot have individual sovereignty for those people who they want to be able to do things, but they don't want to be held accountable for the things that they do that harm others and those types of things. So the only reason liberty is suffering in America today is because nobody wants to be held accountable. Once we start actually embracing liberty and those responsibilities and accountabilities that come with it, I mean, there's a symbiotic relationship between your free agency and your responsibility and accountability. And when those three are absolutely in harmony, that you're actually willing to be held accountable, then you're developing and actually enriching liberty within your county, not just within yourself, but within your community. Because as all people start doing this, it is a pathway forward of being able to develop wealth and being able to develop, you know, this harmony and a productive society. It increases everything and it builds synergies. So I look and I just basically ran out of time. So again, I have to dive back into this on Monday, but I wanted to get into common law. And actually, I needed to provide some insights regarding the Organic Act, because Tammy and I are going to be covering that in the next few days. So I think Monday, before I even get into this, I will do this overview on the Organic Act. And that way we can kind of talk about what we're expecting to find, because we're going to gloss through this. Because it's not what everybody thinks it is, but it is the key. And I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you listen to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.